with Sir Alex.
The amount of teams he's created, the players he's brought through, he's done so much for the game of football.
I mean, he was famous for being quite a fiery character.
And everybody builds up sort of reputation, and all of them are true. I learned along the way when to interfere in something or when to just say nothing. But surviving the years I did, I must have been doing something wrong here. You're the coach, I'm the manager. When you win trophies, it's the best ever. The best ever.
Who's the best trainer that you coached?
Cristiano Ronaldo. He was the best in the world when he came to Man United in his head.
Since Alex retired, Man United have obviously struggled.
Ultimately, they ran out of steam. Results matter. We need to get back to stability, and supporters can talk about the Glazers all the time. There's been demonstrations. They don't seem to be too far away from that.
Do you think it was right for Ollie to lose his job when he did?
Ooh.
Sir Alex Ferguson's right-hand man reveals all on Fergie's formula for success, dressing room secrets, and Man United's downfall. What was it like being Sir Alex Ferguson's right-hand man?
Challenging. it was terrific. You know, it was a fabulous time, fabulous experience. Obviously, when you get the opportunity to step up to that sort of level and work with such an interesting man, interesting football man, it was something that I wanted to do. And even now, I often think back and think, well, why me? You know, because you know, there's plenty gone before me, and I'm sure there'll be lots more people sitting in the same situation that I've sat in. But it's a really intriguing time, you know, because you're now moving into sort of the leadership role area and making decisions.
What were your day-to-day responsibilities? Because we hear about all these sorts of roles, but I don't think many of us, me included, actually know what they do.
Well, it's completely different, for one thing, from being a player and a coach and then, you know, being an assistant manager, because you know, the building blocks along the way is all experience, but when you get to that point, you now are pretty responsible for managing up and managing down a little bit. So, you know, you've got the element of working with coaches and a group of staff. Then you've got to work with the manager and get on that wavelength and then provide opinion and then provide context to certain things and sort of have discussions about consequences sometimes of actions and things like that. So you're sitting in a slightly grey area, but it's quite a powerful area because you can influence a little bit. Sometimes you can, sometimes you can't, obviously. But ultimately, you have a guy who's sitting above you who makes the decisions. But it's sitting in a position where you have to manage the manager sometimes.
Okay.
And you have to manage the coaches and the players lower down, you know. And that can be fraught with danger at times, but you've just got to find a way through it. It's a minefield at times, but you find your way through it.
You mentioned it was challenging. Like, what specifically made it challenging?
Challenging from the point of sometimes you can see something developing, and you can see the consequences of that development before it actually happens. And sometimes when you go, or it's higher, and it's football's quite a big decision-making environment, and it can happen pretty quickly, decision-making. But you can sit in a little area of, let's take our time with this, let's take a deep breath, let's not make the decision now when everybody's losing their head, sort of thing. Calm down, you know, let's have a cup of tea, let's discuss that a bit further, because if we do this, possibly that could happen. In the end, ultimately, the guy at the top makes the choice, makes the decision, but you feel good about it because you've been part of that conversation. And you've made your point, but then you back the decision because that's your job. You know, that's why you're working with them. But you have to give it and give it as well. And sometimes it's correct to say, yeah, that's good, let's go with it. And other times it's like, well, think about it a little bit more. Let's go a bit deeper into it.
I mean, he was famous for being quite a fiery character. I mean, did you have to sort of calm him down?
There's a lot of persona out there about people, and everybody builds up sort of reputations and what you like on camera, off camera, what you like on the pitch side, what you like, you know, in the office, sort of thing. And all of them are true. Yeah. But a lot of them are elaborated on. A lot of them are a little bit exaggerated.
Yeah, yeah.
But ultimately, when you're in that confined space and being a football coach, football assistant, stroke manager, you know, there's a lot of common sense being applied. There's a lot of thought goes into what you do and how you do it. And then, obviously, a lot of talk, but also you've got to act on it, you know. So it's not always what you see is what you get.
Yeah.
But there's a game to be played off the field as well as on it.
Yes. Yeah. Sir Alex is famous as well for changing coaches and assistants quite regularly. Was that part of the strategy? Why did that happen?
I don't know. I've never really asked the question, why me?
Okay.
I thought about it a lot.
Mm.
But the day-to-day job was so rapid, it was just moving on all the time. You know, when you think about a professional football environment, and if you're a successful club, if you're going for trophies, you're playing every 3 days.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's only until you slow down or you stop or you're no longer in work that you reflect on what you've done, because you're always looking ahead, not backwards. You ain't got the time to correct a lot of what's gone on, because the next one's coming around so quick. Okay. It's only a period of reflection when you get those moments, and usually they're not a reflection when you're at work, when you're in the office.
Okay.
You know, we're sitting very close to each other now, and I remember, you know, my office was next door to his office.
Yeah.
But a lot of the time we were doing our thing, and then occasionally we would be conversation that might be in over a coffee, a tea, breakfast, whatever. And a lot of it was probably done outside of the office.
Mm.
You know, when you're traveling and when you're sort of in hotels and you're having a beer or you're having a glass of wine. And those are the really important moments where you do discuss things better, because you're out of the environment a little bit and you tend to think a little. Well, I certainly felt as though I could think clearer.
Yeah.
And you're non-disturbed. You know, if you're Sir Alex Ferguson and you're McPhailen and you're working at a Manchester United and everything's going on all the time and his phone never stops, and, you know, so to have even a 1 minute conversation sometimes is near impossible.
Yeah.
You know?
So you've got to really choose what you're going to ask and what you're going to talk
so
about.
So your moments are pretty particular, and your moments are pretty precious.
Yeah.
And it's how you get that message. And I suppose I learned along the way a type of skill in order to know when to say something, when not to, when to interfere in something, or when to just say nothing. Just stay away from that one.
Yeah, you know, okay. I mean? I imagine there were definitely some.
And there was moments like that, you know, lots of moments like that. But with Sir Alex taking the role of assistant, he gave me a lot of opportunity and time to make decisions and to be there for him, you know, and surviving the years I did. Survival's the right word, but surviving the years I did, I must have been doing something okay.
I'll get back to the podcast in a second. Before I do, I just want to very quickly ask a big favor, and that's to subscribe or follow on whatever audio platform you're listening to this on, and please leave a review. The more reviews we get and the better our rating is, the more people will find about this podcast, which helps us get bigger and better and more interesting guests and further grows the community. You'd really help us out if you could take a few seconds just to do that. Let's get back to the show. Absolutely. I imagine you also got offers to go to other clubs and be the top man, but you never did leave. Why did you stay?
I was at the best club ever. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? The biggest club. It was a successful club. Great players, great working environment, great staff to be around. But I'd got to that point. You know, everybody seems to think that Man United was the only club I ever worked at. You know, but I was at Burnley, I was at Norwich. You know, I was even, you know, coaching at Norwich and Stockport and Blackpool. So there was a journey along the way to get to that point. Mm. To actually get offered a coaching role, having been a player at Manchester United, was sort of out of the blue. I'd lost my job at Stockport County. All of a sudden I'm being asked by Sir Alex to go in to Carrington, have a cup of tea and let's have a chat sort of thing, and put you right on whatever your next move's going to be. I go in there, talk to him, and he offers me a job. So the best thing Stockport ever did for me, really. but it was one of those moments, you know, where you've played there, you know what it's about, you know the extent of the, not the pressure as such, but expectation. You know what the expectation is. So yeah, it was brilliant for me to say, yeah, I'll come along and learn to coach, really. I wasn't a fully fledged coach then. I was just on that early stages of coaching, but it seemed to develop pretty quickly, and probably helped by a successful manager and a great club and also good players. Winning mentality was terrific, and you just apply yourself to that, you know, you're part of it, and it just kicked on from there. And then to become an assistant manager, which is like something you never really think you're going to get to, was a joy when he asked me to do it. And how can you not? How can you turn that one down? And there were moments, like you say, there were moments when during that period you could, you could look at moving on and doing it for yourself and all that. But he had a great power of persuasion to make sure you didn't do that. Let's say that. He could definitely say, why do you want to do that? Why do you want to go and do that? You're much better off staying here and doing this. And to be honest, he was proved right.
Brilliant. So you never asked the question of why you, but what did he look for in coaches, or what did the two of you, if you were making decisions together, look for in coaches?
It's an interesting one, that, because when he talked to me about going back as a coach, you're sitting there, you're talking, you're going over old ground, you know, what you've achieved as a player and all that. And then he suddenly turns around and says, right, I want to bring you in as a coach. And my first reaction to that was, how do you want me to coach? And his answer was, you're the coach, I'm the manager, you coach. And then I'm thinking, wow, that's pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
And then he said, what I can say to you is, I want you to challenge the players every day. I want them to come in, I want them to be challenged, and I want them to go away wanting to be challenged again tomorrow. That's your job.
Yeah.
And that was enormous for me, because we all have our little ways of doing things and all things we want to do. And to be honest, I just knew with Sir Alex that I was given that opportunity to grow. You know, that you wanted to prove that you could do it, that he was giving you a license to learn as well as get better and better and bring all those goods to the table, because I had the experience of playing there. So I understood moments in the game, moments in the football club, decision-making, why things happen here. I'd gone through it, I'd lived through that. So I could relay that back pretty quickly, you know, that what some players think is new isn't really new. It's happened before, it's just frilled up in a little different way.
New name.
It's still the same, you know. Yeah. It's still the same outcome. So I'd experienced all them things, and I think that was partly maybe a reason why he wanted to bring me in. I don't know. I've never asked the question. But it was a great time stepping up different levels all the time.
And with other coaches, were there common themes? Sounds like he gave coaches a lot of autonomy. Were there common themes of like certain things you were looking for, either personality traits or skill sets?
I think so. I think he liked the challenge of having a lot of people who challenged him a little bit, you know. Okay. So it was a case of, you know, he had a strong character, real strong character, great personality, but he also directed everything from sort of the back seat, if you know what I mean. He had a way of being around to make major decisions, but he was always around to say, get on with it.
Yeah.
I like that. I don't like that. What was your thought when you did that? So and occasionally he might say, today we need to do this. And then he'd leave you to find a way to do it. It wasn't like, you know, well, we're not scoring goals, so today I want to practice where we're scoring goals. Well, that's so broad, it's unbelievable.
Yeah,
you know?
But
he wouldn't say, this is the session I want you to do. He would say, no, that's my idea, that's what I want to see out there. Or he might simply say, I want them to have some fun today. I just want them to chill out, relax, you know. And occasionally he'd say, what are you going to do today? And then you'd tell him and he'd go, yeah, that's good. Let's have a go at that. Let's see what it is. All the time you'd say, just tag a little bit of this in. So it was always quick conversations, but it was over to you. Get on with it.
That's interesting.
And it was, you know, he had a way where he stood and observed everything. And occasionally he would dip in, but he very rarely took sessions, very rarely. But he was the guy that went in there and talked it through. He was the guy in there that observed everything. So he was monitoring the whole thing, probably me as a coach and other coaches had before him, but certainly the players, how they were approaching the session. Were they getting a good vibe from it? What was the atmosphere like? Could you generate interest? What's your personality and character like? I'm sure he went through all those things. And in the end, you get on with it. you just get on with it, because that's your job.
I mean, that sounds like quite a different approach to a lot of the top coaches we see now, like a Pep Guardiola, for example. It seems like he would be much more involved in the details of the coaching.
Yeah, there was detail. There was definitely detail, but the detail was more in how we're going to approach the game, not necessarily the training sessions.
Yeah, okay.
Nowadays, you tend to see a lot of functional training. It's laid down. for one thing, there's a lot more people involved in a football team now.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you look at it on a Saturday or whenever they play now, how many people walk out behind the team now. It's amazing how many staff members are on that field now. All have got specific roles. Well, you know, early on in my early coaching, it was manager, chief executive, manager, coach, and then maybe a club doctor, physiotherapist. And it was a small unit, but a unique unit.
Yeah.
That grew enormously. So now everybody has a bit of everybody now, you know what I mean? So, gotcha. And if you're the sports strength and conditioning guy or you're the sports scientist, they all want moments with you. So you've got to find a different way of working now and bringing all that together. But ultimately, it's for the players to make sure the players are in condition to do the job. It can be difficult because the numbers are going up and different coaches have different ways of doing it, and that's good. They have different ways of organising, and they may be scripted, they may be pretty off the cuff, they may be so organised that it's incredibly, incredibly difficult to make a detour from what the programme is going to be. It's just an individual thing. But everybody's got to buy into it in order to make it work. And sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not so good. But we had a flexibility because of the quality we had as well.
Yeah, okay.
Coaches are good. There's a lot of good coaches, a lot of good coaches, but coaching can be seen in a lot of different ways now. You know, sometimes coaches talk, sometimes coaches do. How do you learn? You know, everybody learns differently. Mm. And that's players and coaches and managers. We all have we always think that we sit in a room with 30 players, we talk to them all, and we all expect them to understand exactly what we're saying. Yeah. And they'll all nod and they'll all say, yeah, great, and all that. And then at the end, they'll come up to you and say, well, what was that all about then? You know, can you explain that to me? So some people like to see it. Some people like to hear it. Some people like to just do it. Mm. And you've got to find those ways of communicating. And that's a coach's job, but it's a manager's job as well. And getting that message across the best way you possibly can. And it's challenging.
Yeah. So obviously when you were there, that was a real period of success under Sir Alex. You mentioned around he wanted you to challenge the players every day. I imagine that was a huge part of why Sir Alex's Man United teams were able to have success and keep going again and again and again.
Yeah, there was moments when you challenge them individually, but then you challenge them collectively or in the small groups, right. You know, and how you do that. I mean, we all talk about possession football now. Well, when you're coaching possession sessions, there's a million coaching possession sessions. It's a ball with a group of players, and yeah, they're keeping the ball or you're getting the ball.
Yeah.
And you're enjoying moving the ball around and creating space and things like that. There's a coach talking for you. That's the technical side. But within that, you can coach other things. And within that, you can create an atmosphere and you can create a tempo and you can create, you know, good awareness and things like this, all in just a basic idea, and not make it too complicated, not have too many cones and, you know, all these things out there. Don't make it look like an airport runway at night, you know what I mean? Just get on the grass, set something up and let them play. And it's challenging because you're asking them to do things in the moment, literally live. So it's not a set-up detailed thing. It's more learn how to dribble. Learn. And these are top players who take on that. You know, some are great runners, some are great thinkers, some are great skill players. Some are good at one touch, some are good at two touch. But in one little session, you can get all that out for every individual. And all you're trying to say is keep the ball, move the ball around, find space, this, that thing. But the challenge for them is to do it well, do it quick, do it slow, do it, be in control, be in charge. And when you get a good group of players, sometimes you just stand back as a coach and go, wow. You actually stand there and applaud it.
You can see what they can do.
You can see, because it's happening.
Yeah.
And all you've done is set something up, ask them what you're looking for, tell them what we're looking for in this session, and it happens, you know. And the beauty of it is, do you stop it? Do you let it keep going? They're enjoying themselves. Wow, keep that flavour, you know, keep that atmosphere in there, because they're all being competitive against themselves and each other.
Yeah.
And it's a wonderful thing when it happens. And I'm sure all the top coaches like Jurgen Klopp and Pep, they must put things on and let it roll sometimes, because they'll just go, wow, this is brilliant. This is happening. And all you've done is put something in place and let them take over, really. Yeah. And then stop it. Sir Alex was one who loved to see tempo, he loved to see enjoyment, he loved to see things working, you know, and scoring goals even in practice. But he was also a little bit worried that don't leave it all on the training ground.
Okay.
Save some. So stop.
Don't overdo it.
You know? So when you sometimes see coaches who go on for an hour and a half, 2 hours longer, sometimes we were doing 15 minutes.
Really?
But 15 minutes of real top quality intensity was more than enough.
Yeah.
More than enough. And the players would sort of say, hey, come on, well, you know, we've got longer, you know, we're here all day, we'll do more. And Sir Alex was always, stop, save it for the game.
Okay.
I want that in the game, but I want it over a 95-minute period.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the intensity we try to create. And it's a beautiful sight. It really is when it works.
Kind of like practice doesn't make perfect. Perfect practice makes perfect.
Correct. I mean, how many times do we see shooting sessions on a training ground or players doing shooting sessions, but actually practicing missing?
Right. Yeah,
missing the goal, because the setup of the practice is just about whacking the ball into the goal or beyond the goal. But if you set up a better practice where the function is shooting, so shooting to score goals, hit the target. You know what I mean? Hit the target. Don't practice missing.
Yeah. You know? It sounds obvious, but I can so see how that happens.
But it's just, that's the challenge. That's a challenge. Yeah. You know, it's easy to try and bend the ball for some players. It's harder for others, but it's harder for others to hit the target, you know, because they might be defenders who just really want to do the opposite of that, really, is get it away from the goal. Yes. But they love shooting practice. Well, do it correct, do it right.
Yeah.
You know, practice the right things.
I got a quote here from Gary Neville about Sir Alex and quickly reads. He said, 4 days after losing the 2009 Champions League final, I saw the boss in his office at 6:30 a.m., the only person in the building in his mid-60s. I thought no one can live with that.
That's because he had insomnia.
Okay.
No.
So that's not...
No, it wasn't.
That's not work ethic. He just couldn't sleep.
No, it was work ethic, definitely.
Okay.
But he was... You just look at the man and his background. His background from where he came from, it was all do, you know. You've got to get up out of bed. You've got to go to work. And he did it a little bit earlier than most people, you know. And I think that might have been, if you think about it, his calming moment where he could go in and just...
be undistracted.
Yeah. And nobody's around and he can... It's amazing probably what you can do from 6 o'clock till 8 o'clock in the morning when nobody's around. And then from 8 onwards, it's chaos.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it might be that. But everybody has a different optimum working time, you know. It might be... later in the day, it might be in the afternoon, in the mornings. We all find a way where we really feel more at ease to make those judgment calls you need to make at that level, by the way, as well. You know, you're talking about the manager of Man United.
Yeah.
And also speak to people of the same sort of irk, really, you know, where they're up early and they're businessmen or they've got... So I'm sure those types of people communicate with each other and just see how the land lies and, you know, are you thinking in the right way? And, you know, all these types of things are there if you want to explore them. And he was very good. He was very good at communicating with other people outside of the game. And I'm sure that was part of the reasons where he was picking up new ideas and you know, wondering, has he just got this problem? Has everybody else got it? So it's one of those moments. So everybody needs it. Everybody needs that. But he was definitely a worker.
Yeah.
A real worker, yeah.
I was mentioning before we started recording that we had Mark Klattenberg on the show yesterday. And he was he mentioned around that 6-1 defeat to Man City. And he said that Sir Alex just absolutely lost it. What do you remember of that?
Yeah, he usually lost it on a 1-0 defeat, let alone a 6-1 defeat. No, he was just... Every time you lost a game of football, he always felt, and we did as players and certainly coaches, that could we have done better? With the ability we've got, could we actually have done better? Did we actually put enough into that game to win it?
Yeah.
And if the answer was disappointing and we tried but it didn't work, that's a different outlook. But if we fell short as players, coaches, or even as a manager, not acceptable. not acceptable. And the reason when I used to think about it was he put so much belief in you. He chose you to play. He chose you to be part of this game. He chose you to be on that bench. He chose you to be, you know, his assistant. And you didn't want to fail. You didn't want to let him down. And losing a game, I wouldn't say it's ultimate failure, but there's reasons for losing a game. And if it was lack of effort or lack of planning or lack of intention to win the game, it wasn't acceptable. And I get that. I think that's a great way of looking at it. In high, we're talking about high professional level sport. You know, that you have to bring everything to the game, everything. Don't leave anything short. And that's because he knew what you had. So don't disappoint. Don't disappoint. Bring your tools to the game. Bring your skill set to the game. If you do that, and we all do that, we've got a fair chance, having good players, to get a result. Then we can look at the other side of it. If we still don't get a result, we can go a little bit deeper. But his belief in winning was there all the time. Winning a five-a-side game in training, important, important, because it translates itself into actual competition. Can you handle it? Can you win? Do you want to win? Or do you want to just accept getting beat in training? Or so it's all character building, and that was his personality. So he brought that to the team. Mm. And that's why Gary made the quote he probably made, because it was, well, if this guy's doing it, we've got to get on the same wavelength here, because there must be something going on. We're winning all the time, so it's probably the right way of doing it. And I'm sure Gary applies that now to his own business ventures and what he's doing himself. I'm sure he's got that sort of, that's been sort of laid down to him.
Yeah, just quickly on Gary Neville, has it surprised you what he's gone on to do post-football? Like, what was he like as a player?
No, because everything he did as a player was worked at, was earned.
Yeah.
I think he self-confessed that he didn't feel as though he was the best player, you know, but he had great players around him, but he was willing to put in the time, he was willing to put in the right methods, he did his homework, and I think he's carried on doing that throughout his non-playing career, really. And you can see his attitude is get up, get out of bed, go to work, do the best you can, and do it again tomorrow. And I think he's been successful doing that.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a credit to him.
The Fergie hairdryer treatment was famous.
You're sitting across from a bald man, you know that. And when I went to Man United, I had hair and a moustache.
So there's two questions around that. Is there any one in particular that stands out you think, oh, that was a bad one? And I imagine the answer is yes, but were you on the receiving end of hair dryer treatments?
I was on one occasion. There's plenty of them, but on one occasion I got one. And it's one of them moments as a player where we played the first half at Sheffield Wednesday, and I actually thought I'd had a great half. I played midfield and I thought, wow, I'm in the game here. You know, I'm doing everything. I'm really enjoying myself. I got in at half time and he absolutely blew his lid at me. Honestly, he just went for me, and it was like, wow, where's that come from? If you do that again, and if you don't pass the ball, stop running with the ball and all this. And I'm thinking, wow, you've just hit me over the head with a sledgehammer here, because I'm thinking, I'm coming off the pitch thinking, I'm on it here, I'm MOM here, I'm having a good game.
Yeah.
And he reduced me to nothing. And in the end, I thought, he's going to bring me off. After that, he must bring me off. But no, he throws you back in there with that thought in your head. And you just think, keep it simple now, just keep it simple. You know, and it's amazing. It's amazing what can go through your head, you know, through somebody completely doing reverse of what you think you've done.
Yeah.
And you just want to prove it. You want to prove it that, right, I'm just going to keep my head down, I'm going to keep it simple. And in the end, you survive the game. Okay. And then he explains to you afterwards, and his coach will say, because you'll want to know why. And usually it's the little details that I was trying to do to impress myself rather than impress the team.
Right, okay.
But at the time, I'm loving it. It didn't happen very often because I wasn't that type of player. But it was one of those moments where you just realise, no, if I do my job properly, all the others can do all the other bits that I was trying to do and failing badly at.
We had Wes Brown there. He was saying that he had one off Sir Alex when he was about 19 or so. And he thought he was playing really well at half time. It just absolutely laid into him. And then he sort of went out the room for the second half, and Wes was told afterwards from the other players that Sir Alex, as soon as Wed left the room, said he'll play Tice as well now. And it was like, it wasn't necessarily he was doing terribly, but he knew that that was going to get that much more out of him.
Yeah, but you learn over the years, because when you've worked in that environment, and sometimes as you, from a player to a coach, a lot of things come back to you as you move up the ladder, why things happen when you're a player. So when you become a coach and a manager, you realise the decision making and how the planning goes. But when you're a player, you're pretty selfish. It's about you, you know. And players have that sort of moment where they think they're doing well. And sometimes they are doing well. But in the grand scheme of things, it's not necessarily about you. Mm. You know, and Wes has probably gone through the same sort of situation. You feel good about yourself, you know. But ultimately, it's a team game.
Yeah.
Yes, individuals can make a difference, and there's been plenty at Man United who've done that, you know. But it was sort of Sir Alex's way of keeping you level-headed, don't get carried away. You know,
yeah.
Got to do it again, do it again, do it again, and over a period of time, we'll be successful. So he had a great way of usually remembering the last thing that happened in the first half. He would bring up at half time the first thing. That would be the first thing.
Okay.
So even the players coming off the pitch, we could tell, you know, you'd be winning or you'd be losing. But if you were that guy that gave the ball away, or you were the guy that gave a goal away in that last 5 minutes of the first half, you'd be walking down that tunnel and you'd be going, wow, this is going to be interesting. So-and-so give the ball away, or so-and-so give the ball away and scored. Oh, thank goodness it's not me.
Yeah.
It's going to be really interesting, this conversation. And it usually opened up like that. And then, obviously, you know, it became sort of softer, but that was the first thing he would always refer to.
Okay.
And but everybody got it. Everybody, yeah. Everybody, I say everybody, probably Eric Cantona never got it.
Okay.
You know.
I wanted to ask you about Eric Cantona. It's perfect timing. What was he like?
Oh, he's different character. Yeah. Great personality. Team player. You know, everybody looks at Eric and puts him on the pedestal as a fantastic individual. Yeah. He was,
yeah,
but he was a great team player.
Okay.
Really understood the game, really wanted his team and his players around him to do well. I wouldn't say a difficult communicator. He was French. I think he understood and spoke French better than he portrayed himself at the time.
Okay.
Which is a great thing to have if you can do it.
Yeah,
you
know what I mean?
But he was, even now, he's just a terrific guy to have been associated with. He brought a lot of different qualities to an already successful team, you know, but he was encouraging, and he brought some skills which at that time a lot of young kids inherited. You know, they had ability. You know, I'm talking about the Lee Sharps and all these and Giggses and Scholes and that, where they see Eric trying things and doing things, and they're probably already thinking, well, I can do that, but I haven't shown it yet.
Right,
but now he's doing it. I'm going to bring it to my game. And it escalates pretty quick. You know, and it comes through football players being together. And they get, it goes back to challenging, you know, challenging each other. Well, he can do that. I can do that. I can do that better. And I'm going to try that. If he can get away with it, then maybe I can. You know, so your mind now is starting to develop and grow.
Was he hard to coach, Cantona?
No, he was pretty simple. As playing with him, he was a really, really high class quality player, right place, right time. To coach, I'm sure the relationship between the manager and him was on a different level to everybody else.
Right.
Maybe Sir Alex was practicing his French, I don't know.
In a thick Scottish accent.
But Sir Alex himself had a great way of individualising things sometimes, you know, he could get that message across.
Yeah, okay.
And I think that was a big, big skill he had.
Great man management.
Yeah, yeah, we title it as man management, but I think most of the time it's having conversations with people. And Eric was definitely brilliant to be around, great charisma, great personality. In an unassuming way, kind of way, you know, it wasn't vocally there all the time.
Yeah.
It was more action, do. Yeah. And everybody responded to him, you know, all the players. And that was the beauty of a good team, putting a good team together. We all understood what we all had, And we all needed a bit of everything from everybody.
Yeah.
You know, and some could, like I say, some could run. You know, I could run quite well. I could cover the ground. I could assist people. I wasn't a goal scorer. I didn't know what if I'd have scored a goal, I wouldn't know how to celebrate. You know, it was one of them. But the rest could do that. You know, but my joy was being out there, being selected, putting it all in. The rest, the others could do. And it's just that combination, that jigsaw puzzle that good coaches, good managers try to put together, good clubs put together, you know.
Do you have a favourite moment from being Sir Alex's assistant manager? Is there one that really stands out?
There's plenty of good moments, you know, where you realise all the work and effort you've put in climaxes in winning.
Mm. Yeah,
not just winning a game, but winning trophies.
Yeah.
Because everybody looks at it just from the competition side, the game day, and everybody looks at it from winning the trophy, but ultimately all that work that goes into getting to that point, let alone winning it on a one-off game. Mm. There's moments as players when, as a player, when you win the FA Cup, when you win the Premier League, the first Premier League Man United won, and to get that trophy, you know, and the first Premier League title, you got a replica of the trophy. It never happened again after that. That was the only time they did it.
Right.
And then from then on, it was all medals.
Right.
So just to be in that unique situation and winning the title for the first time in 20 odd years, when everybody's telling you you're never good enough to win it, and you do it.
Yeah.
These are moments that you can only dream of at times, but you're in a situation, you've earned it, you've got there. And it's they're great things. Cup finals are always great things.
Yeah.
Just to represent Manchester United in a moment where you can present something to your club and your supporters, a trophy.
Yeah.
You know, that's really, it's very difficult to express, but when you do it, you forget about it. It's like you forget the game, you enjoy the moment, enjoy the what it means to everybody. And a club like Man United, they enjoy winning. I mean, when you win trophies, it's the best ever, And I won trophies at Burnley and Norwich, you know, and most places that I've been to, I did quite well as a player, you know, in winning. But winning for a club like Man United in Europe, and then as a coach, winning, you know, being involved in three Champions League finals and winning one. I mean, come on, you know, just to get to one, probably is a coach's dream anyway.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But then you win it, and you win it in Moscow, and you just think, wow, dreams, you know what I mean?
Mm.
I can die now. And I've done it, you know. And it all comes flooding back to you. Not the actual game,
but
it's the moment of final whistle, won it, charging down that touchline, jumping on the goalkeeper because he saved the penalty, or, you know, he saved a penalty before the winning one. And you just think, wow, he's lying on the floor. I'm the first there. My heart's coming out of my chest. And I think I'm going to die any moment now. But what a way to go. And I dive on Edwin van der Sar. And stupidly, I forget, there's probably going to be another 25 people coming.
All on top.
And I'm going, wow, don't get any better than this.
A good way to go. I've got to ask you about this. There's obviously the viral video of you popping that balloon next to Sir Alex.
Yeah, no sense of humour, the manager at times.
That must have been brought up to you so many times, clip.
Yeah, all the time. But it was a moment in time as well, because you've prepared the team, there's nothing you can do, you go out, you sit in the dugout, and literally, they're getting ready to kick off. They kick off, the game's going on, but just before kick-off, there's a couple of balloons on the pitch and what have you. And you know when, and we've probably all had this, that we have a moment where we spot something and it ends up cemented inside your head.
Yeah.
And I saw this balloon, it's bobbling around, and I'm thinking, game's going on. If that balloon comes near me, it's having it. It's having it. So there's a fight going on in my head between me and a balloon, let alone the game going on. And as soon as I thought it, I don't know how this happens, and some scientist can probably tell me, some professor, the balloon suddenly attracted to you and it starts to come closer to you. And it's coming, and I'm still watching the balloon. And when I look back and I pick the balloon up and I literally let it go, I put my foot on it, Everybody jumps out of the skin. Everybody. And I'm the only guy having a laugh. I'm smiling and laughing. And Sir Alex is losing the plot. Honestly, he's losing the plot. It's only when I look back, because he obviously, I think if you can read his lips, you won't be far off understanding what he said.
It's not hard to lip read in that scenario.
At that moment, I'm just thinking, that was so funny, that was just... And then I watched it back the night, like match of the day or whatever it was, and I still thought it was hilarious. But if you look at it closely, Sir Alex is the one that's lost the plot. And all the other coaches in that are still laughing behind. They started laughing as well. But they're actually watching the game as they're laughing.
Yeah. you can. And I just see everyone doing this.
That's me done. I think I'm getting the sack in the morning. Yeah. I think that might be me gone. And it was only till the morning after where he called me into his office and I thought, here we go. This could be the moment. And he tried to be serious in the office about it.
Really?
But all of a sudden he broke out laughing. And the only reason he broke out because I think his grandchildren had showed him the clip that night before. And they saw it for the funny, or grandpa had sort of lost it and what have you. And it just lightened the moment up. So, it was funny. It was funny. It was a moment.
Good bit of fun. So Sir Alex wasn't the only manager of Manchester United that you worked under. Worked with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer as well. What was it like working with him?
It was different. It was a different time, a different moment, a different stage in Man United's, we could call it history, really. The opportunity came up again. You know, I'd left.
Were you surprised to get that
offer? Yeah, I was surprised. I'd sort of moved on a little bit. I was looking at other opportunities. You know, I'd left when Sir Alex left.
Yeah.
I took a bit of time out and then I started to creep back in as a coach again. Got the smell for it again, sort of thing. And then I had a couple of opportunities to coach and manage. And it was great. It was a really interesting time. And then when Manchester United were going through this phase of one manager in 20 odd years to four managers in 6 years. Yeah. And suddenly I did a stint at Central Coast Mariners, which was terrific in Australia. Great, great little club. That opportunity came up to sort of dip in and out there 3-4 times a year. Came back at Christmas and then all of a sudden there was pressure on Jose Mourinho, lost his job, and I get a phone call. I'm actually out coaching. Get a phone call and it's, where are you? You know, messages, where are you? We're trying to get hold of you. I've been coaching for like 6 hours.
Right.
So I hadn't had my phone with me or anything. Yeah. And then I heard that Jose had lost his job. So I'm taking these messages. I got loads of messages. Pick up your phone. Pick up your phone. Where are you? What are you doing? So then I did. And it was sort of, Ollie mentioned that the opportunity was there for him to go in as manager. And he was considering me to help him out. Did I fancy that? And of course I said, yeah, if the opportunity's there, definitely. And I still was working at Central Coast Managers, at Central Coast Mariners, who were terrific in the way they handled it. And it was a goer. So I go back in, and it's a different club. It's Man United, but it felt like I'd never been away, but it felt like it was a different organisation.
Interesting.
Just that moment, and I think a lot of it was confusion and what it was, all that confusion of previous managers being in there and all trying to find the way and the players and literally Ollie was the right guy. He was the right guy to create a different atmosphere.
And that's what it needed.
And that's exactly what it needed, you know, and Ollie has a great gift of loving everything about the game. Loves it. Loves being around players, loves being involved in a football club, and he's got an attitude and approach to working. So his philosophy of work is there, but he understood Manchester United. And in them early days at Man United, a lot of our work was common sense approach, you know, identity. Who are we? This is what we are. There's two guys here that have worked quite a number of years here, won things here, so let's reflect that.
Yeah.
And Ollie was a great guy at just believing in the best in everybody and the players, giving them the opportunity, obviously guide them, because some of them were in the doldrums because they were confused. And also off the field, the staff in and around the place, you know, create an atmosphere where you can say hi and shake hands and how are you doing and things like that. Just being a person. And it lifted the mood. Ultimately, you've got to do it on the field and what have you. But then you realise you've got a lot of hard work ahead of you in order to change things. And the way things were laid out was completely different. But okay, because you don't expect it to be the same, but you want to sort of, you want to put your stamp on it again. And Ollie right at the beginning, it went off, you know, it was unbelievable. I think
it was Ollie at the wheel at the beginning.
Yeah,
but it did so well, didn't it?
The performances, the results,
yeah,
they were all there. And, you know, we were pinching ourselves sometimes maybe and just thinking, wow, you know, these players can play. And they could. Ultimately, they ran out of steam, you know, and then we had to build again. And it was just different. It was challenging. It was different, but you're at a great football club, and there's always possibilities. But in the end, you know, results matter. Results matter, and I think it was just that moment in time where nothing was really. How could you put it? Nothing was really for the longevity of it. It was more. They'd gone through this 1 in 25 years to 4 in 6, or you know, I might have my numbers wrong there, but there was a turnover happening, and you're part of the turnover, so it's a different attitude that you're working in. But ultimately, they need to get back to stability, and history tells you, the more stable places are, the more chances you are of achieving something. You look at Wenger, and you look at all these types, Pep, and even Jürgen, and you know, the modern managers now, stability creates a good working environment, both players and staff, and introduce and adapt as you go along. So I don't know whether there's a secret in that or not, but football doesn't allow you that now. I mean, there's a difference there now. There's definitely a difference there.
You mentioned the players ran out of steam. Is that why you feel like it went wrong? Were there other factors?
No, I'm talking probably in the terms of bringing their game to the game, if you know what I mean. So I'm talking physically and mentally. It's a different challenge. Somebody else comes in, wants different things. Can you go the distance? Are you prepared? Because you've got to think about when you go into a football club. You're going in midway through. So they're at a certain stage, but then you're pushing the levels. Have they got the steam? Have they got enough gas to get you to the end? You know, sometimes that's physical and mental. You know, it's not players' fault. It's just the overall environment sometimes.
Okay.
And can you maintain that? You know, when you go off on such a great, I think we were 12, 13 games in and we'd lost, I don't think we'd lost the game. I think we probably drew a few.
Yeah, that we'd first won a lot. It was amazing.
You know,
yeah.
So we'd gone from really low to wow. Mm. You know, and you do realise, because you've been in the game long enough, that you can run out of gas.
Yeah.
You know, because you're not ready to go that far. But then you learn that it's there and you can prepare the next time round and you have to put the jigsaw puzzle again together.
It felt like at the beginning, Ollie came in, absolutely changed the mood and things improved massively because of it. By the end, when results were getting worse and worse, it felt like the players weren't playing for him anymore, looking on the outside. Did you get that sense?
No, I never did. No. There's a lot of easy things to say in the game of football. You know, you can pick it up that we're changing direction. That's a great one nowadays. We're going in a different direction, coach and club. Okay, well, there's a parting of the waves. Or you've lost the dressing room. They're all great quotes. And they're just statements that people can make pretty easily.
Right.
You know? Yes, they can find, you know, ways of asking those questions on individuals within staff and with individuals of players. Mm-hmm. Usually can find that out through, you know, we can all get the answer we're looking for if we look deep enough, you know, and that comes from players and staff. You know, most of the time, players that don't play can give you the answer you want, you know, which makes an article. But you can also get an overall sort of feel because performances on the field all look right. So then you go digging again as to why that is. And there's all sorts of reasons for that. You know, players lose form, coaches lose their way a little bit.
Okay.
You know, these things are pretty human nature at times. How you deal with adversity and how you deal with, you know, as a lot of people put it, the noise that's going on around. Because at a club like Manchester United, that never goes away. I'm sure it happens at Liverpool. I'm sure it happens at Man City. I'm probably sure it happens at Burnley. People like, you know, clubs like that, it's there. You can't get away from that. But you've got to stay focused on the job in hand, and that can be difficult. But you've got to handle it. You've got to be able to handle it. So to say Ollie lost the players, only Ollie could answer that question.
Okay.
But I never got the feeling that they damn tools.
Okay.
You know, and professionally, I wouldn't like to think that anyway.
Yeah.
Because that's what they are, professionals, and you've got to stay professional and do the best you possibly can. You know.
Do you think it was right for Ollie to lose his job when he did?
Ooh. I would say no.
Okay. You'd have given him more time.
I would have backed him a little bit. Because the judge of anything, I would think, is, look, if it's blatantly obvious that things aren't working, I suppose you will make changes. But in moments of hard times, that's when you've got to stick together, I would have thought, and try it, you know. I don't know what the conversations were with Ollie. I don't know how it all sort of finished. I've never asked him that question. I never would. It's his person.
Yeah.
All I know is that I think Ollie could have took it a bit further.
Okay.
You know, and in general, the atmosphere was good. Just results. We just got poor results at the wrong time. You know, losing to Man City, losing to Liverpool, who at that time probably were the best two teams in the league.
Yeah.
And losing to Watford, okay, albeit in the final 10 minutes, 15 minutes, where the scoreline looked, wasn't a great game by both teams, but yeah, whatever conversations Ollie were having with the hierarchy at that moment in time, I'm not interested in really, because that's why you're a manager.
Yeah.
Those are their conversations. But ultimately, I just thought you could stick with it. It could develop, it could turn the corner, but ultimately results didn't happen.
Mm. What does that feel like when results aren't going your way? That must be tough. The atmosphere must be tough.
Yeah, it's frustrating, really frustrating, because you know you can do better.
Mm.
But it's not an individual thing, it's a collective thing. It's just having moments in football matches, and sometimes things go against you in football matches.
Yeah,
you can't, you know, you can explain it as much as you like, but you lost and you have to take that on the chin. But there are also circumstances that maybe you've picked the wrong team, or you've just had a blip, or, you know, for Man United in its heyday, a blip was losing one game. If you lost two, it was, you know, it was scary.
Yeah.
But it didn't happen very often. No. So when you now look at football and you lose, you know, what they play, if they play in every 3 days, the top teams, so say in a month, you possibly could be playing 12 games, 10 games at least,
yeah,
in all levels, all so you're being judged on 10 games in 1 month, and yet the season goes on for how many months? And ultimately, that's where the pressure mounts a little bit, you know, is, well, we've not won there, or we've drawn there, and we need to win this one, or we can't afford to lose that one, And that's when it all builds up into this crescendo of you're having some poor results. And the facts are there because everybody's seen it, but we sometimes forget that it comes down to a decision, or the performance was great, but we just got unlucky.
Okay.
But you can't describe unluck. What is, we talk about luck and unlucky, what is it?
The media won't take kindly.
No, you can't. You know, we talk about injuries. They're all part and parcel of it.
Yeah.
But fundamentally, you've got to get out there, do the best you can, perform, and get the result, or get more good results than not.
Did you find the players harder to manage during that era than previously under Sir Alex? Are modern players harder to manage than they used to be?
It's a good question. I think mentality's changed in footballers.
How so?
Probably the scrutiny is far greater. Everything's instant now than it ever has been. We're all guilty of having mobile phones and technology and instant access to stuff. I mean, now things that happen in a football match are live. Do you know what I mean? They're out in the big wide world as the game is still going on. So everybody's forming opinions during the game. It used to be opinions after the game in the pub or, you know, in a discussion and things like that. Whereas now it's happening all the time, all the time. And I think that brings a little bit of scrutiny on players as individuals and teams. Also, I think what's different now, which probably wasn't there before, it might have been in a small way, but players are brands now. They're their own brands. They're commodities. They're their own brands. I think in my day as a player, it was more of a career. It was career.
Yeah.
You know, as you got better, as you progressed, as you won things, you got rewarded. So ultimately you were working, you know, as a young apprentice, went through. Every time you did well, success, you got a new deal or you got a little bit more cash, a little bit more money, a longer contract, bigger club, so all these things. Nowadays, that comes
straight
very,
away.
Very quickly.
Yeah.
And with that, big responsibility.
And big egos with that as
correct,
well.
Correct, yeah, probably, yeah. Yeah, everybody's different. Everybody handles it differently. Everybody has a different take on what they want to achieve. How they want to get there, how quick do they want to get there, or are they willing to wait? I mean, you talk about, you've got kids now, you know, you got one on the way and one already. They're very young now, but you wait. the demand that's put on you now, you know, because it's instant. They want it now. Why can't they have it now? Yeah. And it's hard sometimes to explain to them, hey, you know, this is a journey. This is part of the progress. You know, we're getting better. You get rewarded. You cannot fail. In the Premier League, if you're a player in the Premier League now, you cannot fail to earn money, good money.
Yeah.
You can't, it's there. You know, if you're good at what you do and you do it well, you get rewarded and you get rewarded very, very well. So ultimately that shouldn't be the driving factor because it's there. No football club can afford to, you know, they afford you as long as they possibly can and that's good money.
Yeah.
And then when the time's right, yeah, they will move you on. But that's business.
Yeah.
That's a fact of life. But now players are businesses, they're brands. So they understand that journey now a little bit differently to what we did. So you've just got to get your head around it because that's the way it is.
Okay. I want to ask you about Roy Keane.
Oh, right.
I imagine that managing Roy Keane would have been very difficult, being able to give him instructions and have him not come back at you.
Yeah, well, I actually played with Roy Keane, believe it or not.
Right,
I played against Roy and played with Roy at one point.
Okay.
But actually coaching Roy, I thought was simple, really. You're talking about a top player. You're talking about a player that is pushing and pushing and pushing the boundaries all the time. And he wants to achieve. He's a winner.
Yeah.
He's a winner. So in essence, you've actually got everything at your disposal. Personality and character, what you see is what you get. The thing is when do you want to venture into those areas of Roy Keane, when Roy Keane's at his best and worst? Do you know, okay. Do you understand that? So, but his drive and demand was fantastic. Fantastic. As was a lot of other players. But at times, there's explosion, you know what I mean? But that's football, that's part of it. I lived with football players more than I lived at home and lived around my own children and kids. So you get to know the quirkiness of it all. Certainly as a coach, you know when to step in there and when not. And Roy was a leader. He voiced his opinion, sometimes right, sometimes wrong. But then again, all players have the opportunity to do that. But ultimately, he performed. He performed. And that's all you want as a manager and a coach, perform. Bring it to the table. And most of the time he did. And then you handle the bits that you have to handle. You either handle it or you get somebody else to handle
it. He's sort of famously fallen out with Sir Alex and they don't have a great relationship this day. Was that inevitable, given the two personalities?
I can't really answer that one for you other than other than, you know, whatever happened, happened between them two, you know, and you're not the only person to ask that question of what was that like, but
yeah,
my relationship was okay. It was okay.
Okay.
But we could talk and he would challenge me.
Right, yeah.
You know, and we would discuss, and I'm sure he would sometimes look at me and think, wow, he ain't got it. It's right. Not happening. Right. And I would probably think the same things now and again that,
yeah,
you know, come on, Roy, calm down, or come on, Roy, you know, there's a bigger picture here.
Okay.
So I think, you know, I still see Roy now, and we still talk, we still, you know, we discuss certain things, and he is exactly what you get. So don't go looking for anything other than what you're going to get. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And just be reasonable. You know, he's a good guy. Roy's intelligent.
Mm.
He's bright. He knows football, but he knows Roy Keane's football,
okay,
which is pretty winning mentality.
Is it difficult to let go and sort of move players on, especially if they've been incredible players for you for a long time, but you feel the time is right?
Yeah, you get an attachment. You definitely get attached to a lot of football players for different reasons, you know, because they bring different qualities, or they're just great people, they're great lads, and you want the best for them. You want the best for them. But you also got to have a detachment, knowing the game, knowing what is round the corner, you know, and it's performance. It's bringing your A game every day, all the time in the competition, because you're being judged. And there are moments when you have to make those decisions. A lot of the time, I only had to make those decisions when I was a manager, you know, when I was at Hull City for that period of time. But when you sort of sit in that mid-role, that grey area I was talking about, you can have both sides of it, you can see both sides of it, but then you have the responsibility of backing the decision of the person that's making the decision. And usually, the good guys make more decisions right than wrong. But you've got to think bigger picture. You're now talking about leadership, and you're talking about, you know, running a football club. So you have to start to think bigger picture. You know, we all have a certain time span. We all have certain moments when it's not happening, and how do you juggle the jigsaw puzzle from there on in? Mm-hmm. And you have to make decisions that sometimes... I don't know any manager. I wouldn't like to think any manager loves to pick his 11 every game when he's got 30 players at his disposal. We're all fit,
always difficult,
all capable.
Yeah.
I would think that's possible. Well, I know, but I don't know it at the level that Sir Alex or Mr. Klopp would do, or Pep. That must be one of the hardest things ever to do, because you know they're good enough, you know they're available, but I've got to pick this team to win the game of football. That's got to be hard. That's got to be hard. And also, you've got to keep them motivated for when you do need them.
Yeah.
And that's probably even harder.
Yeah.
For everybody to do. But if you want to be successful, that's possibly the most important thing you've got to do. The ones that are not playing are probably the most important players, to make sure the other players who are playing carry on doing what they're doing.
Yeah.
So there's a different psyche, a different mentality as to how you do that, and only you can find a way of doing that.
Some other players I wanted to ask you about that you coach. Wayne Rooney. How good was he?
Oh, good. Good. I mean, Wayne at 16 was 36. No, he was a man.
He looked it as well.
Yeah, he was a character. But you want character. You need character to get through your life in football. You know, you have to have character and personality, and Wayne had loads of that, but he had ability.
Mm.
And he was tenacious, and he was strong, and he was unfazed. You know, he was probably one of the early players in this next generation where bring it on attitude.
Okay.
You know what I mean? I'm not fazed by anything.
Yeah.
I'll have a go at anything. I'm good enough to do this. And he did it. He produced, you know, and... he was terrific, terrific ability, great mindset, at the right club when it needed to be, with the right players. And then you think about Wayne and the partnerships he had with Tevez and all these. I mean, I played as a defender. I was a centre-back. I wouldn't like to play against Tevez and Rooney together.
No. Wow,
beasts, pair of them. So whatever happened to the other defenders that played against them, they were terrorised, you know? Yeah. But that was, again, putting them together. And it worked. It worked terrifically. And they were only just two, you know? There's been others in Man United's history of, you know, your Van Nistelrooy's, and then you put Cole and York together and Cantona up there and things like that. So now you start to see the qualities of these guys. And that's just at the top end, you know. There's others. I forgot a few of the others. You know, I apologise for not being able to...
of course, there's no way you could list
to mention all of them.
You'd have no chance.
But they all brought a mass amount of quality and a mass amount of work ethic and winning mentality that they could play. And Wayne was one of them that could lead from the front, lead through ability, and just keep pushing the boundaries.
Were you surprised when he handed in a transfer request?
Yeah, probably. Mm. Probably because everything's going okay. Reasons why, I don't know. You know, that's again, those discussions happen behind closed doors. But yeah, I don't know. It's just a moment in time where you reflect on something, you make a choice, and you put it out there, you know, and then the consequences of that, I suppose, you've got to deal with them. But having a player of that quality, they're like little diamonds because you have them for so long.
Okay.
And so appreciate it when you've got them. it's like inevitability comes along now and again, you know, where you know it's going to be short and sweet, but it's going to be brilliant. So rather than worry about what might be, just go with it and other decisions along the way. And in football, everything changes day to day, everything. So you might as well understand that and expect that it's coming your way at some point. So yes, I was surprised at that moment that he was looking to move on, but he'll have his reasons, I would have thought. Never discussed them with him.
You mentioned Carlos Tevez as well, obviously went to Man City. How did you feel about that?
I was sorry to not be working with Carlos Tevez. Obviously, the added bit is when you move across to your neighbours, but
as a sense of his, that's a bit traitorous
of that.
And
from a supporter's point of view, probably yeah, they probably would think it's like a Man United player going to Liverpool. There's not been many of them. There has been some, you know, but and the other way, Liverpool coming to Man United, you know, does it happen? That's more of a fan thing. I think when you're in the game of football at that time, you wonder why has that happened? But then you realise it's going to happen. You know, you've no divine right to keep hold of a player beyond a certain period of time with a contract. They're going to move on. Sound pretty philosophical there, don't I? But to actually, go across to your neighbour, you wonder what's gone on there, but what can you do about it? Mm. You know, the player does it for his reason. Supporters don't like it for their reason. But there's nothing you can do about it.
Who's the best and worst trainer that you coached in Man United?
Brian McClair, when I played, wasn't a great trainer.
Okay.
You know, if you did, in those days, we would do a lot of running and things like that, and Brian was always blowing. He was blowing a gasket, you know, he was not interested in all that. But come to a game, he'd probably run the furthest. If you put a tracker on him now, he probably would have run the furthest in a game. Hmm. You know, and there are players like that. So did what he had to do in training.
Okay.
Did enough, I suppose, in order to get him to the game. But in the game, came alive. So I wouldn't say you could class him as the worst trainer, because players work out what they need to do in order to prepare themselves to get to the game. Best trainer are usually the ones that put everything in. Cristiano Ronaldo was I would say challenging, but also really on it all the time. He would prepare to train and prepare again to train. Ready for the next session. Not always the star man in training, but putting a lot into what he needed to be the best in the world.
Yeah.
And he had a mindset that was fantastic. really, really challenging, but fantastic. He was the best in the world when he came to Man United in his head, and he was only just starting out in the game, but he knew.
And could you see it?
Yeah.
Was there a sense of that? Like, this guy's going to be one of the best ever?
Yeah. There are moments when you come across people. One player I could say that about now would be Jude Bellingham.
Mm.
And I saw Jude just going off piste a bit, but I saw Jude at Birmingham. He played four positions in one game at 16 in the championship, and he was man of the match in all positions in that one game. And I just went along because I'd heard something. I didn't go because I was scouting, but you go.
Yeah.
Try to keep a low profile, but in the end, you're coming back and going, well, I've just seen probably the next Brian Robson here.
Wow.
And I played with Brian, so I understood that. I was thinking probably could be better than Brian Robson. But he was 16. But then you look at someone, you know, like we just talked about there, and just stand out a mile, you know. But not just ability, courage. You know, their courage and determination and knew where they wanted to go. And all that comes with it, the frustrations of not progressing fast enough or not challenging him enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Cristiano was all that. He was all that. But ultimately, he's still playing now because he did a lot of work, intensities that's kept him going now, but quality work, you know, not just on the field, off the field, but a real mentality, you know, to just push.
You mentioned he was challenging to manage. Why?
Because he was a star. He was a star, and you knew what you had in a player like that. And there was other players, but Cristiano sticks out because he was a match winner. He could go off-piste, Cristiano, you know, because of his ability. So when you've got a team of players that function really, really well together, and the opposition have a team of players that function really well together and are good teams, it comes down to the individual in a moment.
Yeah.
And he had that. He had that in bucket loads where he could literally get you out of your seat and you would go, wow, that wasn't in the script. How did he do that? And you could ask him and he wouldn't even know. He just does it. I just do it.
Just genius.
And it's brilliant. It's brilliant that. And you listen, you can't coach that. You know, you can't take credit for that. That's there. You know what I mean? But subtly, you can bring things out of him, you know, like team play.
Mm.
Cristiano was a massive individual at Sporting. You know, you see that kid and he's running the show. You know, it's him and the ball, him and the ball.
Yeah.
There's no other ball. Everybody else needs another ball because he's not giving it to you. You know, and that was that in training, things like that. And eventually, you've got to sort of have those conversations of, yeah, we want loads of that. But remember, there's 10 other players out there as well that you can pass it. You know?
Yeah.
So you restrict in training certain things, and he'd hate it because it wasn't his strength.
Just wanted to drill around.
But then when you see him do it and the players appreciate that, and then he takes that with him to Real Madrid, and then he goes beyond that, and you think some of those things he learned at Sporting came to Man U, and a lot of the things he learned at Man U he took to Real Madrid, and then he's gone on again, and it's wonderful.
Yeah.
It's wonderful to see that was the guy with the open mindset to be able to say, I can do that. I can bring that here and take that there. And this is the moment I use this. And forever pushing the boundaries for myself, but also the coaches to make sure he developed more and more. And look what he's doing now. He's in another European final. I think he's broke a record, being selected for another European championships.
Yeah.
And I can guarantee he'll score goals. Yeah. He'll score goals in it. He could even take them all the way to winning it again. And what is he now? 39? Is he knocking on the door at nearly 40? Wow.
Yeah,
fantastic.
Why didn't it work out for him coming back to Man United?
Ooh. I think probably he looked at the standard of when he left to when he came back.
Okay.
You know, and I don't think he probably understood that. Maybe. I've never had the conversation with him, but what he did bring back was his high level. He had that in abundance.
Was that helpful or harmful at that point, though? Because if the other players aren't
helpful.
Up to it...
It was helpful, it was because helpful. You're talking about, you know, in that dressing room, you've got a world-class player. I'm not saying there weren't others in there, because there were some very, very strong-minded individuals in that dressing room. But he was bringing this high standard of performance and appreciation of what it takes to be a serial winner into a dressing room that he was looking to progress. He was looking to push it on. And for whatever reason, it didn't work out in the way I think he expected it to. And he made the choices he made and moved on. And that happens. That happens. You don't have a career that always is beautiful, and there are certain things you have to live with and consequences to actions. But ultimately, he made his choices for himself to move on.
And I guess with a character like that, things like the Piers Morgan interview are possibilities.
Well, he got a great scoop out of it, didn't he? I don't know whether that was more about Ronaldo or more about Piers.
Broke records in views, I think. Since Sir Alex retired, Man United have obviously struggled. Do you think the Glazers are to blame for that? You obviously worked for the Glazers for a long time.
It's easy to point fingers. I'm not that type of guy. I think you work within the confines of what you've got to work with. You know, I never had any real relationship with the owners because that wasn't my role.
Yeah,
you know, that was a manager's job and a chief executive's role. But I could honestly say that I was never restricted in my role in any way.
Hmm.
Off the field, supporters can talk about the Glaziers all the time. There's been demonstrations. They don't seem to be too far away from that all the time.
Yeah, yeah.
But you've got to get on with the game. You know, it's the game. It's the match and everything like that. And I couldn't affect anything higher up. That's some other's role and responsibility, you know. But you know, they've been there a while now. You know, they've now moved it on into a different environment in a way. I mean,
yeah,
reading between the lines because I'm not prominent there anymore. But you know, there's a slight new shareholding going on. You know, I wouldn't say ownership, but certainly 25% or whatever the deal they've struck up is there for everybody to see. And football decisions look as though they're going to change.
Yeah.
There's a lot of talk.
Do you think it worked? Do you think Ineos and Sir Jim will improve things?
Well, it has to work. It really has to start to show signs of working, but it's not going to happen overnight. I mean, I think they've done a lot of groundwork. They're looking at it. I know, Mr. Brailsford, I've had chats with him before when I've not been at Man United and he was at Nice and things like that, you know, where we've had calls online and they were just starting out at their new club in Nice, a new sort of environment for him. So, you know, he's probably learnt fast and he's bringing that to Manchester United. And, you know, he's a successful guy. Both of them are.
Yeah.
The business of football is a little bit different and they'll understand that and realise it, as many people do. But you've got to get a winning team on the football field. And how you do that, along with everything else that probably they've been talking about.
Stadium,
training ground, all these things. You know, a lot of it is talk.
That's something I wanted to ask as well, actually. Cristiano Ronaldo was quite critical of the training facilities when he came back. When you came back to Man United, did you get the same sense, thinking things haven't been further developed?
Well, I didn't have a swimming pool and a sauna in my house, and I didn't have 20-odd pitches at home. I had a lawn and, you know, I had a bath and a shower. Whereas, you know, when you're in a training ground with all that, I appreciated what I got, okay? But there are issues, you know, that buildings, you know, we all have houses and, you know, if we don't paint them regularly enough or we don't do the pointing on the walls, it starts to corrode a little bit. So I think there was an element of that, yeah.
When you came back and you think
when I came back, the facility everything was there.
Yeah.
It was just a case of brightening it up, sprucing it up, you know, that type of thing. I think Cristiano realised as well that you've got to also understand all these players now in the Premier League, they have these facilities at home.
Yeah, yeah.
It's amazing, really.
He's expecting the absolute,
you know, and they have chefs level. And they have kitchens that cost more than my house. You know what I mean? And and they have saunas, gyms, pools. They have gardens that stretch for like 3-4 acres or more. They have football pitches in them now. You know, you see it all the time on the TV. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And rightly so, if they can afford to do that. So their standard of living is huge, absolutely huge compared to your supporter. And they expect that when they come to work.
Right.
you know, and you've got to provide that. You've got to get better at that, you know. I'm not saying it's got to be bigger and bigger and bigger, because sometimes small's beautiful, you know. But there are expectations now within Premier League football clubs as to what level and standard you have to meet. Man United had it all there. Yes, they had a few porter cabins on the car park and things like that, but tell me a place that doesn't when you need to grow
and
grow quickly. So it's easier to get a porter cabin on the car park and then wait to build something. I get that. But ultimately, you need to maintain our standards in order to attract and make those, as Sir Dave Brailsford says, make those small improvements, you know. And each small improvement becomes a bigger thing in the grand scheme of things, doesn't it, you know?
Another player I wanted to ask you about was Paul Pogba. There's a general sense that his career has not gone as he or many people would have expected.
Winning the World Cup's not a good thing to do.
Okay. Well, you know, fair enough. That's a very good counter. What are your thoughts on him and how his career has gone?
I remember Paul when he was a young kid at Man United, and he was a promising young talent, and he was pushing to break through. But his competition in front of him was massive. I mean, you know, he's a talented young individual. He was pushing to get in, but then you have Scholes, Butts, Keynes, all them in front of it. There was patience to be had, and he provided that, and then obviously he moved on. He went to source his career somewhere else and did really well, really well. Started to mature and really become a football symbol, really, in a way. Then he goes to a World Cup and wins a World Cup, and now he's in stratosphere land, you know what I mean? He's now still relatively young, won a World Cup, and attention's on him. So you've got to do things well all the time. And to be honest, Paul was a great character.
Okay.
I can only talk about the Paul I know. And Paul was not an issue. Paul was never a problem. Paul was, his timekeeping could be a little bit iffy now and again, but he liked his kid.
That seems to go round in the Man United player group.
But, you know, all the time you were striving with Paul and saying, you know, there's more. You can really explore, you know, even though he's a World Cup winner, he can bring his A game. He's unstoppable. You know what I mean? And you look at his stature, you look at his finesse, you look at the quality. And it was consistency. Get the consistency. Now, whatever develops along the way, you know, is a club going through a bad time results-wise? Is Paul not in a good place? I can't answer those questions. All I know is working with Paul, we were trying all the time to get more and more out of him. And ultimately, I don't kick the ball. Ollie doesn't kick the ball. Paul kicks the ball, so get him on the field and let's get him playing, you know.
Do you think that was a mentality thing? Was there a lack of belief there of what he could
do?
I don't know,
because he never came across as being, you know, despondent or down and all that. You know, he never, I think possibly what he might have wanted was more quality around him.
Okay.
Possibly. Good players like to be with good players. I'm not saying that they weren't good players there.
But he really wanted that for France, didn't he?
He wanted, yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Maybe he wanted those consistently good players around him to bring the best out of himself. Some people thrive on being the main man, and some need a little bit of something around them to bring it out. Maybe that wasn't there. I don't really know. It's a difficult, but working with him, no problem at all. Talking with him. Good knowledge on the game. You just wanted him to explode, you know, and really take it on. And sometimes we got it. And when you get it, wow. But when you don't, as a coach, you get frustrated. I'm sure he got frustrated as well with it. I'm sure he did. And ultimately, he's moved on and things haven't gone the way he would have expected, I would have thought. But I'm not his judge and jury.
Last question. Is Sir Alex still the greatest manager of all time? Or is...
That's because the debate's been over the period of time. For me, I mean, I've not worked with Pep and I've not worked with Klopp and these types of guys, but I appreciate everything that they bring to the game. But when you work with someone like Sir Alex, yeah, for me, he's still probably the champion of all that because of his length of time, what he's done in the game. the amount of teams he's created, the players he's brought through from kids, you know, class of 92 stands out a mile, but he's still brought other kids through who've had careers in the game of football.
Yeah, yeah.
So all those things in the time he's been in the game, yeah, you've got to put him. I mean, I don't know many other managers out there that have made such an impact and an influence, not just on one club. He did it at Aberdeen for a period of time, but over a period of a career, that's frightening, really, that he's done so much for the game of football and done so much for footballers that he's just, yeah, I think it's an hard act to follow, that one. And I think it's unfair to say so-and-so's better and so-and-so's better. And it's easy to do that because that's just the debate and that's just media and we all do it. Who's better than that player and that player and why? And you'll never get an agreement. But you just look at the impact he's made on the game over that period of time with so many different players and teams he's created. It's frightening, really. And also to have that length of time.
Yeah.
Not many get that now. If impossible, I think. 20-odd years and at the top doing what he does.
Could Pep Guardiola surpass him?
Yeah, he could. Yeah, he could. It all depends whether Pep wants to go that long.
does he want to keep working another 15 years or so?
Because he's got to win the title every year. That's the thing. It's unacceptable. He's got to that stage of such high success and high performance that even when he has a blip, it's scrutinised as, oh, they've lost the plot, they've lost the plot. And that's the way it'll go, you know. And it's whether he wants to put up with that because he's tremendous, tremendous guy. I mean, I've met him a few times. He's massively enthusiastic about football. But he's another that just loves what he does. Suffers, like every manager and coach suffers when he has to. Not as much as others, but certainly. But he's worked with great players and he's made players better for a start as well. But it's when he wants to do it, you know. Jürgen's seen the light. He wants a breather.
He's off to Mallorca. Yeah. Go lie in
but,
the sun for
you know,
a bit.
I think he deserves it. He deserves to make those choices, Amari. And he'll deserve to take time out if he wants it forever or what he wants to choose next. And I think that's, you know, in this game of football nowadays, I think you have to have that option at your disposal, you know. Otherwise, you'll just go in one day and fall at your desk, you know what I mean? And not get back up. And what a way to go that would be.
Not quite as good as underneath 25 players.
No, not as good as that. That is the
at the end of a Champions League final or whatever.
But it's great because all these people now have opportunity to reflect.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Jürgen will do it. Pep will do it whilst he's playing his golf and things like that. Jürgen will do it in Mallorca if that's where he's going to live for a bit. And it's a moment you have to do that and enjoy it. Enjoy what we've done.
Yeah. Fab. Well, thank you very much for taking the time to come and speak with me. Really interesting stuff today. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thanks.